You're listening to the Blue Box Podcast, and for the next 60 minutes, we're going to be talking about Doctor Who so that you don't have to. Hi, I'm JR.
Hi, I'm Jim from the Crinoid Podcast.
Hi, I'm Mark from the Proctor Who Podcast.
And this is the second half of my attempt to gather together some podcasters to talk about 10 years of new Doctor Who and to tell us about their podcasts. And we were supposed to be a three tonight, but unfortunately, due to technical issues, somebody's had to drop out, so we're just the three of us. But, on the other hand, that probably, hopefully, give us a bit more time to talk. And as during the last podcast, we left this right to the end and had to rush through it. But I think both of you two have got very interesting podcasts. Cool. So I want to start. Wow. The reason I've got you on is because I enjoy those podcasts. Awesome. Otherwise, I wouldn't have touched you with a barge pole, quite frankly.
And we wouldn't have come on.
Yeah, exactly.
If we didn't
like
yours.
We listen to you too. Yeah. Yeah. Brilliant.
So first of all, Jim, tell me about the Crinoid podcast and describe it for people who might be listening to this who may not have heard it.
Well, it's a review podcast. We don't do news or anything like that because we don't get out with anywhere near enough regularity. But we're regular, but just not very frequent. If you see what I mean. It's when the show's not on TV, we're a monthly podcast and we concentrate on classic stuff. The best way to describe it probably is it's a cross between a book group and the fact of fiction column that you get in Doctor Who magazine.
Oh, that's a really good description, actually. That's a perfect description.
Well, I used to find it difficult to describe it until that came out. It came out a few years after we started, so it's a good point of reference. So basically, we pick a classic era story, and we go through it. There's quite a lot of Mickey taking, to be honest, but it's all from a good place. Ooh, what was that?
That was Mark's daughter doing something that Mark doesn't want to talk about.
You might want to wash your hair after that, Mark.
That was
What you do with the Crinoid podcast, you go through scene by scene, and yeah, you do take the Mickey a lot. But what I really like about it, because I think this kind of reflects also a little bit of what we do on the Blue Box podcast, is that by going through it scene by scene, what you're doing is working out how stories work and how writers work and how they introduce things and how they resolve things and all that kind of stuff. I've learned things about a lot of stories listening to the Crinoid podcast that I would never have noticed if I'd have just stuck them on and watched them.
Yeah. God bless you, sir. We aim to educate and entertain.
And then, of course, at the end, there's like half an hour of just bitching about it.
That's a trifle unfair. Can you have positive bitching? Because there's some of that as well.
Yeah, no, I'm just kidding.
So I was going to say, when we go through scene by scene, it sounds tedious, but hopefully it isn't as tedious. Tedious as all that. What is that noise?
Sorry, that's my BBC News app just coming through. Sorry about that.
You might want to turn that off.
Yeah,
this way.
Sorry, man. Let me just go into that.
Unless you're waiting for some news.
No,
from the BBC.
I didn't even realise it was on. How do I turn it off? Sorry, man.
Just throw it to the other side of the room. No, you probably can't. It's probably attached to whatever you're talking into.
The BBC won't mind. You're a licensed player.
Sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I can't turn it off. It's because I'm on my phone, you see, with this Skype, you see. It's my app.
Right. Oh.
I'll delete the app. Let me just delete this BBC app. That's the best idea, isn't it? And then it's not going to...
And then you can start it up again afterwards.
Yeah, sorry.
This is going to make for a great
podcast. It is. Sorry, guys. Sorry about that. Go on, then. It started.
Radio gold.
Well, I could always edit this bit out, but you know what? I won't.
Oh, no.
Because the people listening, this is what doing a podcast is like.
Warts and all.
Exactly. Brilliant. What were we saying, Jim? We were saying...
It's kind of... each of our episodes is... Well, the classic episodes are broken down into three, really. So we go through the actual story. We talk about the production stuff as well as we go through. Then we do a review or bitch session, as you so eloquently put it. And then we do a feedback section at the end. So basically at the end of each episode, we say what we're going to do next month. So people have got a month to go and watch it. And then they ping us some feedback and we read that out. And it's all, interactive and stuff.
One of the great things about the way it works is that for the first sort of hour and a half or whatever, however long it takes, as you're going through scene by scene, you kind of start your podcast, if you know what the format is, thinking, right, I'm looking forward to the review bit at the end. But actually, the hour and a half where you're going through scene by scene is so entertaining and so enlightening as well, educational, that the whole, it's like you don't need to look forward to the bit at the end because the whole thing is just as good.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well, that's the way I feel about it. And how many people are there having this conversation?
We've got a pool of about, 15 or so people, I guess, who...
No, on the podcast. I mean, for people who might want to tune in and listen to it, how many of you are on the podcast?
Oh, sorry.
The hosts.
I don't remember 15 being on it.
I was going to say.
The other 13 are silent partners. it's just me and my old mate Martin. We go way back with Doctor Who. And at one point we shared a flat in London and we spent ages talking about Who down the pub. And we actually embarked on watching everything in order while we were in the flat together. Didn't quite make it. We got to about Davison before, we went our separate ways and got married and stuff. Yeah. But so it's Martin. So it's just me and Martin. But the other thing that happens, we haven't done it for, we did it for Matt Smith's first season and we've done it for Capaldi's first season and we intend to do it for the next one. And that's while the show is on the air, we do a much shorter, just kind of discursive podcast about it, much more free form, but just try and whack it out as soon as we can during the week between episodes. Once you found us, I think quite a few other people found us, because I like to think of us as one of the of Doctor Who podcasting's best kept secrets. even though we've been going for about nearly 6 years in October.
That is quite a long time.
It's a long time for we've got a loyal fan base. It's not enormous, but then we are a bit niche because our podcasts are long and not everybody wants to hear people banging on about every scene of every episode sort of thing. But
I think anybody listening to this who thinks, I don't fancy that, I think you should just try it, because it's the kind of conversation that it's really easy to sort of get involved with.
Definitely.
And you've both got, and Mark, you'll agree with this. Both Jim and Martin have got quite relaxing voices as well.
Tell us you fell asleep a few times?
No. What I mean is sometimes you'll tune into a podcast and even if you like what the people are saying, you tune out again because of the voices. But you two have definitely got the kind of voices that are easy to listen to.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Definitely.
So it's an easy conversation to get involved in, even if you don't necessarily think they're going to at the start.
Well, I mean, it's almost what we used to do when we were watching it, in the shared flat. But, we used to make each other laugh. So, we thought, well, maybe this will transport to a podcast kind of thing. I don't actually like commentary podcasts because I can never be bothered to set up the DVD and do that kind of stuff. So this is a bit like one, but you don't have to have the DVD in front of you.
Exactly, I agree with that because I listen to podcasts at work. So if I'm listening to a commentary podcast, I'm forever thinking, oh God, what scene are they talking about? Yeah, what line of dialogue is that they're referring to?
Yeah. Yeah, I never listen to the commentary episodes either of podcasts. No, not for me.
They're very difficult. Yeah. But Jim, here's one question I did ask last time. and this, and for somebody who's been doing a podcast for 6 years, your answer might be a bit different. But, well, I think we all know that podcasting has kind of come a long way in the last few years, has kind of really gone over ground.
Yeah.
But you, being around for 6 years, you kind of preempted that. But one of the things I found interesting last time is that everybody seemed to think that if it hadn't been for the new series, and not necessarily because of the new series, but because of the way the series has reinvigorated people's interest in Doctor Who, that their podcast probably wouldn't have existed if it hadn't been for the series coming back. But do you think that's true for the Crinoid podcast as well?
Maybe not. I mean, if we hadn't heard Doctor Who podcasts ourselves, we may never have had the idea, I suppose, to do one ourselves.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, it's tricky. I mean, if there were... Well, Martin introduced me to podcasting in general, to be honest, because, you know, I kind of heard about them. I hadn't really got into them or anything like that. And Martin sort of said, well, these are two that I listen to.
And, are you going to tell us which two they were?
Well, I won't tell you one of them, and you'll find out why in a second.
Oh, okay.
The two, I mean, they're both very popular. One of them was I think it was DWO at the time, and it became the Doctor Who podcast.
Right.
It was Trevor and Marty were doing it at the time. And that's really good. We thought, oh, that's, you know, something to aspire to. The other one, which I won't name.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, we both thought it was pretty terrible, but it was really popular. Oh. So we thought, you know, it kind of gave us the confidence to have a go at it ourselves in a weird... inverse way, if you like.
Right, gotcha. We can do that. We can do better than that, sort of a thing.
Exactly, yeah. But, I mean, had there been no other Doctor Who podcasts, I suppose if I'd got into podcasts in general, I might have thought, well, there must be some people who are interested in Who, you know, even if I hadn't come back. Yeah. And thought, well, why don't we do one? I mean, we kind of did it, you know, for our own amusement to start with, because... You know, we moved geographically. I moved down near to Bath in the southwest, and Martin's still in London. So we were kind of losing touch a little bit. And this was a good way to kind of almost do what we used to do in the living room when we shared a flat.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, when Skype came along, you know, Skype had been going for a while before that, but I hadn't really got into it. And we thought, well, we can do this via Skype, so let's try it out. And we did a test episode, and then we did a slightly embarrassing first episode, and then we kind of got into our stride a little bit by the second one, which was about the Deadly Assassin, which was episode number 2.
What was the first episode then?
It was just a kind of introduction to us, and then a little discussion about the differences between Classic Who and New Who.
So your first story you chose was the Deadly Assassin then?
That's right, yeah.
Oh, auspicious start. Now, you've just said you moved into the West Country.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I've moved into the West Country, although many, many, many moons ago. But that makes a nice segue, because I used to live up north, which is where we can find Mark.
Hey.
Oh, you Mark. Smell smoothie.
That's radio. Hey. Mark, before we get into what your podcast's about, then, we'll start at the same place. Do you think you'd have started Proctor Who? And... Proctor Who, you actually started with reviews of the Peter Capaldi episodes.
That's right, yeah.
So, but do you think you'd have started the podcast without the new series? Or do you think that partly maybe because you started with those reviews, that's what kicked you into gear?
Yes, it was. It was season 8 approaching was my dream, sort of, to get the podcast ready for that premiere sort of thing. So it all sort of clicked into place really at last moment. But yeah, it was always the intention. I just wanted to do a podcast. I listened to your podcast and to Radio Free Scar and to Jim's, and just always, and a couple of prog rock podcasts as well. And I thought a combination of these two would be brilliant. And I just thought that's going to work a treat. And then I met Craig. Well, I met Bob first a while ago, and we spoke about Doctor Who, and he just wouldn't stop talking about Doctor Who. And I thought, if I ever do a podcast, that's the guy I want to co-host with.
And then,
and then I met Craig at a gig in Whitby, where Craig lives, and I met him, and he every time he saw me, he'd just come over straight away and talk about Doctor Who. I thought, I know the third guy is going to be as well. So, it just sort of put it together from there. Yeah, and it was definitely season 8 was the thing that kicked us into gear, definitely.
You're all three of you actually musicians, aren't you?
Well, me and Bob are. Craig plays a little bit guitar, but doesn't, you know, he doesn't do any bands or anything like that. But me and Bob are gigging musicians, yeah.
And that actually informs the way you put the podcast together.
Okay, yeah.
Because it's not just... Because, okay, then, for the people at home who may not have heard Proctor Who, then, explain Proctor Who.
Well, Proctor Who, as the title suggests, is a combination of prog rock tunes and talk about Doctor Who. We play 3 songs an episode. The episodes last approximately an hour. And in between the songs, we talk about Doctor Who in different ways. At the minute, we're doing a classic series review, and we're next listening to Revelation of the Daleks, which is Craig's favourite story of all time, apparently. That's for the next one. Before that, we were a weekly thing all the way through season 8.
It's just struck me, actually. Mm. Both your podcasts have got the same frequency, weekly when there's a series on and monthly when it's not.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a treat, really, you know. Yeah,
well, it's nice, though, it because you also must struggle to find the time to do it sometimes.
Yeah, I'm gigging a lot, and Bob is as well, and it's getting everyone's time. And plus, just the setup, how I used to record it, I used to have to take my studio inside the house and set up in the living room and basically have to banish the family upstairs for 2 hours while we recorded. So, that you know, obviously now I can come out to my own little studio and do it. We might get more frequent. I thought it worked really well doing it as a weekly thing while the show was on air, because we get to talk about that week's episode. It was just a blast to do. I just loved it. And then, obviously, when that finished, just to chill out before Christmas, we just went monthly and thought, well, let's just keep it like that until the show comes back for season 9, and then we'll go weekly again.
And it's really relaxed.
Yeah.
The big difference between your two podcasts is that while Jim's podcast is very in-depth,
yes,
yours is, well, yeah, I mean, but what's really nice as a podcast listener is having different podcasts for different moods, right?
Yeah.
So if I want to listen to something very in-depth, then I'll listen to the Crinoid podcast. But if I want to listen to something...
Light and fluffy.
But no, I was going to say, it's not light and fluffy. No. It's not in-depth.
No.
It's like 3 guys having a conversation in the pub with the jukebox playing in between.
That's cool.
But even though it's not like this sort of really in-depth conversation, you still hit all the relevant points. And you still... And this is always my... This is always my criteria. If I listen to a podcast and at the end of the podcast, you've come up with a thought or an observation or something that would never have struck me to think of myself, then I think that I've learned something. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean, definitely.
Yeah.
And although your podcast might be sort of 20 minutes of songs and 40 minutes of conversation, in that 40 minutes of conversation, you're still making me think, you're still making me see things in new ways.
Yeah, good. That's cool. That's great. I mean, and hopefully you've heard some good songs in there as well. That was the idea, that, you know, songs you would never otherwise have ever heard, and some songs that maybe prick your ears up a little bit. That's the intention.
Yeah. Can I just butt in there? Because I think it's worth saying that you don't have to be a prog rock fan to really like prog too, because you don't tend to choose a really sort of shreddy type.
No, not at all. No.
Like stuff. Do you? I mean, it's all accessible. And it's all really really good music. So don't be put off by that, anybody, because it's a cracking podcast, and you might find some new bands to follow as well.
Oh, cheers,
and
Jim.
Also, and the other thing is that, I mean, obviously it's probably just, well, no, you might think it's coincidence that you're a prog rock fan and a Doctor Who fan, and you've put the two together in a podcast, but actually, I think prog rock and Doctor Who kind of go hand in hand anyway, because they achieve a lot of the same ends, don't they?
Yeah, it's magical.
And so your conversation being punctuated by these songs sounds like the kind of conceit that might make people scratch their head and think, I can't listen to this, it doesn't fit. But it's such a smooth transition between the conversation and the music and back again that it just feels perfectly natural.
Yeah, well, that's the intention. it seems to have gone well. I mean, we've had some lovely feedback. And to be honest, it's just really fun to do, isn't it? I mean, it's just fun to chat about Doctor Who with your friends and have a laugh. And we do have a laugh. there's always a lot of laughter in our podcast, which is just a spontaneousness yeah. that happens when you get the three characters together, really. It's just what happens.
That's it, yeah. Yeah. But that's the other thing about great podcasts, is that if you're listening to a podcast, you know you're enjoying it when you start talking back to the people, or if not talking back to the people, wishing you were in the pub with them having that conversation.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And that is exactly what I get from Proctor Who and from the Quinoid podcast as well, it has to be said.
Excellent.
But that is exactly the sort of feeling you get. It's like three guys sitting in a pub, talking about Doctor Who, bringing up some interesting points, and not shying away from having strong opinions and having good music on in the background.
Cool. I'm glad you like
it. And it's a great, and speaking of the music, it's a great way to introduce people to prog rock, because it's not like sitting them down in front of an entire album and saying you will listen to this minutes.
I mean, it was always the intention to make sure the songs are the most important thing. It's not the fact that it's prog rock, because a lot of the stuff, as Jim said, isn't strictly prog rock what I play. I just like to play really good songs, that even some that just with a tinge of prog it, maybe elements in, you know, but just good songs. Yeah. That's the most important thing.
And you played Manson the other day, which made me immensely happy.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it's Bob's tune, that one.
Oh, yeah. Right, we should talk about Doctor Who, though.
Oh, aye.
Before we move on, I never do this, and I always say that I should after we've pressed stopped on the recorders, but where will you find your podcast? Where will we find the Crinoid podcast?
Well, you'll find us on iTunes. Well, I should spell out Crinoid just in case people don't know how it's spelled. Here's a tip to anyone starting a podcast: is have a name that is easily spelt.
Yes,
it's Krynoid. But if you're fans of the Tom Baker era, you will already know that. Mm. So look us up on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, and Libsyn as well, I guess. But rather than using Libsyn, which I don't know what you think about the sort of front end of Libsyn. I don't think it looks very nice. But we have the same material on crinoidpodcast.wordpress.com, which is our blog.
Right.
I mean, Libsyn does a kind of automatic sort of serviceable blog page, but it doesn't look very nice. in my opinion, I hasten to add.
So, Mark, Proctor Who, where will we find that?
Okay, www.proctorwho.co.uk. We have our own website, and follow the links from there. There's iTunes and all that sort of stuff, really. And on Twitter as well, Proctor Who.
And as I always say, all you need to do is type in the name of the podcast into Google, and Google will take you straight there, won't it?
Yeah, definitely.
It will
so people can find that. Right, guys, let's talk about 10 years of new Doctor Who.
Yay.
And if the past podcast was anything to go by, we'll just talk about the classic series for the next an hour or so, yeah?
Yeah, excuse me.
But the question I think I started with the other guys was, do you remember where you were when you heard the news that it was coming back? Mark, you first. Do you remember when you heard the news?
I do indeed, yes. I was living in York, a place called Acombe in York. A bedsit, and my best mate lived next door in his bedsit, and I used to go on his computer on a morning, so I was checking out Doctor Who news, and I read the news that it was coming back, and I was elated. You know, I've been counting down the days since it, since 1989 and 96. It was a brilliant time.
Did you spend those 15, 16 years then thinking this is something that will happen one day?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Had you written it up?
No, definitely. I never, ever agreed that it was finished, never. I knew that it was obvious that one day someone would get that idea and take it. And it was a proven success, wasn't it? You know, there's no doubt about it. And it was just a timing, wasn't it? It just all happened at the right time, even though we could have still done with it a few years earlier. But
I think in some ways the classic series, the way it changed from the 60s to the 70s, and people barely even noticed, but it changed quite significantly, really. I think it proved that the idea was strong enough that it could work at any time and place. It just needed somebody with the sort of conviction to do it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But Jim, do you remember then where you were when you heard the news?
I'm afraid I don't have a JFK moment for this.
Oh.
I can't honestly remember the exact moment, because I mean, I think quite a lot of rumours have been flying around. There was that the Dark Dimension, was it, film that they kept talking about?
Yeah.
It was kind of used to things, you know, being floated and then nothing ever happening. My guess is that Martin, you know, my partner on the Crudenard podcast, yeah, probably tell me, because he was still in touch with the show. I'd kind of lost touch because I didn't particularly like the TV movie much at the time. I quite like it now, actually. I didn't get the Doctor Who magazine anymore. I didn't read any of the books. I didn't listen to Big Finish. I just, I know, bad fan. But I just watched the videos. That's all I did.
Yeah, you say bad fan, but actually, I think that's true for an awful lot of people.
Probably, yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, there was a kind of sort of gradual drip feed of information was coming through about it. And, well, I'll probably answer your second question at the same time.
Yeah, go ahead,
really,
yeah.
Because I kind of thought it probably wasn't going to happen. And I almost needed it. That terrible trumpeting noise has come back again.
This is podcasting on the hoof. Carry on, Jim, carry on.
Well, it sounds like a cow, actually. I've lost my thread now with all that mooing going on. I kind of almost waited till it appeared in the Radio Times, and, you know, we started getting adverts, you know, on the tube and on the TV and stuff. And I thought, okay, well, it is actually coming back this time. Because, you know, I suppose there must be, but, you know, judging by that, a pessimist by nature. But
it's true. There had been a lot of apparent attempts to bring it back in the meantime, and none of them had been remotely successful, had they? Apart from the TV movie.
Well, yeah. I mean, but that was kind of, that wasn't successful in the States, wasn't it? I thought they would be people who would fund the next, you know, if it ever came back, they would continue to fund it, and it would go down that route. And when that bombed, because it was opposite a very key episode of Roseanne, wasn't it?
The very last episode of all time.
It's the very last one, was it? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, well, we're used to that kind of programme scheduling from the BBC when they're trying to kill a programme. But yeah. I mean, that must have just been bad luck, obviously.
But even though the Americans, I think they lost their confidence in it and said, we've got to put it somewhere, and we'll put it here because it doesn't matter. Nobody will be watching it anyway.
Yeah, that may well be right. I mean, there were decent viewing figures in Britain, but I don't think that actually proves much, because I think a lot of people are tuned in on one night just for the sort of curiosity factor.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's curiosity.
I didn't actually meet anybody who liked it after. All the people I knew who'd watched it, none of them particularly liked it.
I liked it.
I didn't know you then, Mark.
I did enjoy it. I mean, I could see it's failing sort of thing. I mainly loved it for Paul McGann, to be honest. I thought he was just such a brilliant doctor. And such a shame that we never got him again.
And if it proved one thing, it proved that you can make an expensive, good-looking version of Doctor Who.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed it. I mean, yeah, it had so many failings. You can see why it didn't take off, can't you? You can totally see it would have been wrong. And even if it did go to series, we'd be watching a different show now, or maybe no show at all. You don't know what would have happened. It was just a twist of fate that didn't happen, if you know what I mean. It was a path that maybe wasn't taken, wasn't it?
Came
back with the way it did 10 years ago and was instantly successful, wasn't it? Really just blew everybody away straight away.
Yeah, I think in retrospect it was a good thing that it wasn't a success, really. I mean, the gap might have been smaller, I suppose, but I think the end product was better.
What did you two both think when it actually came back then? Did you both enjoy it?
Well, this is where I was going.
Sorry, Joe.
No, that's all right. Jim, go on then.
Well, I mean, I didn't get the kind of culture shock that I might have done. You know, when we open up on the scene with all that, high in the mix music and not like any music we'd ever heard on Doctor Who before. I just kind of thought, well, this is what telly's like now. I didn't go, you know, this is not Doctor Who. What's going on? You know, I just kind of accepted it for what it was. So, and to be honest, I really enjoyed it. I mean, I think there's quite a drastic lull in the middle, and I think the burping wheelie bin was misjudged, and the plastic Mickey stuff is could have been more successful, but I mean that's a kind of a lot of 5 minute blip in the middle. I think other than that, I really enjoyed it.
The curious thing is, I really enjoyed the plastic Mickey stuff. The wheelie bin, I could take or leave. I thought, right, that's a joke for the kids. Fair enough. They can have that. But the plastic Mickey stuff, I just really enjoyed that.
Well, I think with the burping wheelie bin, it surprised me because I've been, you know, I can't remember a time when I wasn't watching Doctor Who. So, you know, I was watching the later Pertwees, you know, when I was 4 or 5 or whatever. I didn't need a burping wheelie bin to feel included.
No, I think what more than that is just for the kids, inverted commas. I think what the wheelie bin signified was that the people making the programme weren't going to take themselves so seriously that they'd mess it up by being over-serious with it. It was a signal that Doctor Who was going to not be afraid to be daft.
Yeah, well, it certainly gave that signal.
Yeah. But I didn't mind that. I don't mind Doctor Who being daft. And old Doctor Who is very often daft, and sometimes by accident rather than deliberately.
Yeah, well, true. I mean, I don't mind clever daft or even accidental daft. But, I mean, stuff that's put in there, which, I don't know. I mean, I suppose kids probably laughed at him, and that's great if they did. But, you know, for me as a, whatever I was, you know, 30-something at the time. It didn't ruin it for me, but just thought, well, this might not be quite what I was expecting.
No. Well, was it in any way what you expected? Because that first episode was just crazy in your face, sort of, well, just crazy in your face, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, for me, my problem with it, I had the problem that with Eccleston's Doctor, I just didn't like him. I didn't get him in the role. As soon as it started, it didn't feel right to me. I didn't recognise the Doctor that I'd sort of grown and, you know, known and loved all my life. He just seemed like a different character with his accent and the way he looked and everything. But I thought, well, I'll get used to him. And I'm sure he'll grow on me. But then between Rose transmitted and the end of the world, it was announced he was leaving. Yeah. So I just thought, well, let's get on with New Guy then. And because I'd seen Tennant in Casanova, and I thought, oh, he's going to be great. He's more like the Doctor that I thought, you know, would be how he would be.
How did you get on with the rest of the first series then, Mark?
I did enjoy it because I thought Billy Piper was absolutely fantastic, and I loved Rose, and I thought there was some amazing stories. The Dalek story was great. The Unquiet Dead, I really, really enjoyed that. And obviously the Moffat two-part was just stunning. It was brilliant.
Yeah.
So I, on the whole, I really enjoyed it. But I soon realised that Russell T. Davies' scripts would be my least favourite out of each season. And they were. And whenever it was a script that wasn't written by him, I enjoyed it more. So I immediately had a problem with the showrunner as well. It was a weird sort of comeback to me. Because I loved having the show back. It was amazing. I just missed the central character. And as soon as Tennant came on board, I just thought, there he is, that's it, that's the Doctor, I recognise him now. And then I was brilliant with it, you know, it was great. But so that,
I've had to...
Sorry, go on.
Go on, no, go on.
I was just saying, so that first year was slightly marred by that because I couldn't quite get over, I didn't get Eccleston as the Doctor. Unfortunately, I wish I did, but I just didn't. So that slightly marred my enjoyment of that first year, I think.
That's fair enough, especially as Tennant was so close behind, so... Yeah. It wasn't ever going to be a really big problem, was it?
No, that's it. No.
I was going to say about the Russell T. Davies episodes. At the time, I thoroughly enjoyed the Russell T. Davies episodes. But now, looking back at it retrospectively, I've gone the same way as you. I prefer the ones by other people.
Yeah.
Which wasn't the case while they were on, oddly enough. Very strange.
Right. I always think that with Doctor Who, with us being such massive fans of it, you always want it to be amazing, don't you? And you have this ideal of how it should be every week. And when it's not like that, you always feel slightly disappointed in it. Do you know what I mean? It's bizarre, isn't it?
Really? Yeah.
Well, it's almost like we can't enjoy it as much as someone who isn't such a big fan, which is crazily the wrong way around, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's strange, isn't it?
And actually, as a person who has to write reviews, and usually I have to write the review after I've seen the episode just once.
Yeah.
And I'm exactly the same. I always find every episode slightly disappointing when I first watch it because you go in with expectations. And it's only when you watch it the second time when you know not to have those particular expectations.
Exactly, yeah.
And you can actually look forward to the stuff that you know is going to be good.
That's right.
And I have to try and write my reviews looking at it from the perspective of a second viewing after I've only seen it once, which makes it a very strange experience writing about it.
Yeah.
I bet it is.
And your opinion can change on an episode from, you know, I remember the first time when I watched Girl in the Fireplace, because I'd enjoyed Empty Child so much, I was really looking forward to it. And at first time I thought, what? I just didn't quite it didn't click with me. I didn't quite get it.
Yeah.
It was only on repeated watching. I appreciated more the intricacy of the story and stuff. Then I really enjoyed it. But yeah, the first watch, it was weird. It's weird how it works.
And the other way round, The Bells of St. John, when that was first on, I thought, oh, that was okay. I'm sure, actually, given that it's a Stephen Moffat episode, that by the time you've seen it two or three times, there'll be lots of stuff in there that you missed the first time.
Yeah, exactly.
But then the second time, there was nothing. Jim, how about you? That must be true for you too. Episodes like that, you know, ones that have really either sunk or else have, like, really gone up in your estimation on the second time.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, I have to say, I had quite a long period of time where there was a lot of New Who that I wouldn't ever feel like I wanted to watch the second time, which sounds terrible, I know.
Well, it's true for a lot of people, though.
Yeah.
Which era was that, then, Jim?
Sorry?
Which era was that? Which era?
Well, particularly Tennant. I mean, during the Eccleston era, I mean, I'm with you, actually. I didn't quite take to Eccleston. I didn't like him. Well, you'll sympathise with this. I didn't like him telling people to shut up.
Oh, I know that feeling.
Which, if anything, Capaldi does even more. But oddly, at the time that Paul McGann was cast in the TV movie, he was my favourite actor.
Yeah.
And at the time Eccleston was cast in, you know, the first series of New Who, he was my favourite actor.
Oh,
so
really?
I couldn't believe my luck. And actually, John Hurt has always been another one of my favourite actors, and he's now been the Doctor.
It's all working out for you, Jim.
So that was good, yeah. But unfortunately, what I would say about Series 1 is that Eccleston, I don't think, played to his strengths. I mean, I know he wanted to show that he could do comedy and stuff like that.
But he can't.
When he came to Doctor Who, all he did is really show that he isn't really as good at that as he's everything else, and he's an excellent actor at everything else. So it was only moments like Dalek, and well, particularly Dalek, where I thought, yeah, this is the Doctor that I was expecting to see.
Right.
Where he was, you know, absolutely full on. And actually, the end of the world, you know, the bit when it's that little tear about the death of Gallifrey and stuff. It was moments like that when he dialed it down, and I found the same with Tennant. I don't know if Russell D. Davis was standing, you know, at the side of the camera just saying, yeah, go on, zany it up, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, I got the feeling that kind of thing was happening because I thought both actors were so much better when they just dialed it down and played the serious stuff. I mean, Tennant is heartbreaking when he does the really downplayed serious stuff. You know, like the, you know, Bad Wolf Bay with, you know, the goodbye to Rose and all that kind of stuff. There's actually nobody better, I don't think, at him for doing that kind of stuff. But then, going back to Girl in the Fireplace, you get, you know, a wonderful episode, actually. But then you get him, I know it's scripted that he's drunk and he comes in with a thing around his head and stuff. But for me, I thought, it's just, you know, when's this scene going to be over and can we just get back to the good stuff?
Yeah.
But actually, when you rewatch that episode, that makes so much more sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because I think in some ways you need to have that zaniness from him in order to get the payoff at the end of the episode, I think.
Yeah, that's not as good example, really, as probably this one, which is The Satan Pit.
Where right, yeah.
The Satan Pit has always been, you know, one of my favourite, you know, couple of episodes of New Who. And I watched it again the other day, and I just thought Tennant almost wrecks that scene when he meets the Beast, you know, down in the bottom of the pit, because he's mugging away and doing his Frankie Howard impression, which really gets on my wick. And the rest of it was just so wonderful. But it brings me to a point that in the old days, when you used to watch Classic Who, there used to be like a really dodgy effect or something. Even in Robots of Death, you've got that doing when Leela throws the knife into the robot, and you've got, obviously, Ignore the Rat, but you've got the rat and Talons of Wing Chai. And yet there always seems to be just an element of sabotage into every really excellent Doctor Who. And it's not so much effects now, because effects are, you know, almost uniformly brilliant now. But I find it's things like little either directorial choices or acting choices that are the little clunky bits that you get now. And I think that bit in the Satan Pit, it goes nowhere near ruining that episode. But I just think, well, if you just dial it down a bit, then
yeah,
it would have been perfect. But there is no perfect Doctor Who episode, but you know, there are some that are very, very close, and that really was, I thought.
You've actually hit kind of a nail on the head there. You're right. There is no perfect Doctor Who episode. There is always something. and I think the ones that we like the most are just the ones where we're more prepared to forgive those somethings, really.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true.
I think the nearest to perfection episode of Doctor Who, in my opinion, of new Doctor Who, is still Blink. Watch that, and there's very little to fault in it, really, in my opinion. Incredible episode. Yeah. It's the benchmark as far as I'm concerned. You know, that's the only one that I can give a 10 to, really, to be honest.
And yet the one thing that is the central conceit that makes that episode work is probably also its biggest fault, is that it doesn't really have the Doctor in it.
No, exactly. That's bizarre, isn't it? I mean, yeah. my favourite episode is by far that season. In fact, the whole Russell T. Davis and David Tennant era, Human Nature and The Family of Blood, and then Blink, them three together, they blew me away when I first watched them. I thought, this is amazing. Especially Wonderful, Blink, yeah. I just sat there with a big smile on my face all the way through thinking, wow, this is this is how they should do it every week. but obviously they can't. But yeah, I thought that definitely for me is still the unbroken benchmark of the whole series.
Well, the director's coming back, isn't she?
Yeah, definitely. Looks
she's
good.
She's coming back. She's coming back next season. She the director
for Hattie, the first two. Yeah, Hattie MacDonald.
I've never understand why she's not been back before. I mean, such a brilliant episode and so beautifully directed.
Yeah. Oh, mind you, often people will be busy elsewhere, too busy to come back.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
I think this is the thing with Stephen Moffat, is that whereas Russell T. Davis, it seems to me Russell T. Davis was using fairly established directors whose careers, and it says it's going to sound horrible and patronising, but it's not meant to, whose careers weren't necessarily on the way up. Yeah. So if he got a director in the first series, then he could, generally speaking, know that he would be able to get that director again for the next series.
Yeah.
And so you had people like Eros Lynn, who's a brilliant director, but who was able to be a regular throughout the entire Russell T. Davis.
Mm.
Whereas Stephen Moffat, it seems to me, they've been choosing directors who are very much at the start of a very much upward trajectory. And so they'll do a couple of episodes on Doctor Who, but then they won't be back because they've gone on to bigger and, air quotes, better things.
Yeah, yeah. Is the bigger and better things in Doctor Who? Is there?
Well,
is that sacrilege.
Yeah. Well, bigger budgeted and better paying.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, there's definitely that.
Yeah, because Doctor Who is, in spite of how it looks, Doctor Who is still quite a cheap program to make.
Crazy, isn't it?
Mm.
It looks so amazing nowadays. It's just even when you watch the first season, as we're talking about, going back and rewatching them like I did last year. I did the entire run. It's amazing.
Oh, really?
I just did it, timed it incredibly well. Started in January and did all the series right up until we watched Matt Smith's last one a couple of days before Peter Capaldi's first. It was amazingly timed.
It
was brilliant. So it was great watching them again, and it has now it looks so beautiful, doesn't it? How it's moved on, the film, how they film it and everything nowadays, and even the score, the music now is so beautiful compared to how it was when it first came back. Even though there's some lovely stuff, obviously.
And it's in the right, place in the mix as
well,
I think,
now. Yeah, yeah.
Talking of which, going back to a question that came up a few minutes ago, and you said, what were we expecting when it came back? You know, a few years before, the Randall and Hopkirk deceased thing with Vic Reeves and Bob Mortimer.
Okay.
And Tom Baker.
Yeah. And when that was on, I remember thinking to myself, this isn't particularly good because Vic Reeves and Bob Mortimer, as much as you might like them, they're not really actors.
No.
Yeah.
So they were doing the funny stuff, great. But when those episodes kind of got to the serious part at the end, they weren't really able to do it justice. But what I was thinking was, this atmosphere that they've got going on here is how Doctor Who should be if Doctor Who came back. And when Rose came on, the music, when she, you know, that runaround music at the start, and then towards the end when they're chasing after the bus and what have you, or chasing over the bridge, that music was straight out of Randall and Hopkirk Deceased. And I was thinking, Russell T. Davis has actually brought Doctor Who back, not too dissimilar from that Vic Reeves and Bob Mortimer thing from a few years ago.
Well, I often thought that like the template for Doctor Who could be that program, and I'm afraid I've just forgotten what it's called. But it's got the guy from Coupling, you know, the curly-haired guy, the Welsh.
Yeah, guy. Strange.
And Strange, yeah, with Samantha Janus in it.
Yeah.
I thought, well, hang on, this is kind of, you know, this is well.
I think it was made by Doctor Who fans, basically.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I thought this was the kind of thing that, you know, and in fact, I thought he might be a good choice, you know, if we were getting, you know, when it came to choosing the next Doctor.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But yeah, I never struck me with Rowland Hopcook, but I suppose the kind of zaniness that they had in there,
the
was
tone,
the level of zaniness was perhaps more like Doctor Who than that was, yeah.
Yeah, it was, like I say, daft, but, you know, Russell T. Davies is Doctor Who. Especially right at the start, but a little bit throughout. It's quite cartoony, but does the serious stuff as well.
Yeah.
And that was the thing about Randall and Hopkirk that I saw, that it was daft, but also serious.
I always used to think that Rusty Davis wrote with big brushstrokes, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Absolutely. It was much more intricate sort of thing. It was just my style of writing that I just couldn't quite get on board with all the time. Even though he was beautiful at emotional moments, Russell T. Davis, I think he's... Yeah. His Doctor, I think, has more heart than probably his Moffat's in a lot of ways. And I think the combination of them are both... Moffat's era I could do with a bit of Rusty Davis' heart, I think, in my opinion. And, you know, to make it perfect. As much as I love Stephen Moffat, because he's brilliant.
And the other way around as well. Russell T. Davis' episodes would have been much improved if the plots had just been that little bit tighter.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, the thing about Russell D. Davies' Doctor Who is it's very character-based. The thing I wasn't quite so keen on when it first started, perhaps Series 1 and Series 2, is I didn't really like the characters very much. So, you know, if it's character-based, that's...
Right.
You know, and you see, I personally am not going to be on to a winner. I mean, Captain Jack, for instance, strikes me as the kind of person, if he turns up to a party, you're going to walk over and get your coat.
Yeah. Or at least see if there's another room somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I feel like that with Captain Jack, to be honest. But I did. You see, I've had a problem with the characters in Moffat era, the female characters. Amy, I just didn't like at all. I just couldn't find. I found the character awful, really hard to warm to. And River,
I thought that in Series 5. I thought she was a lot better in Series 6, actually.
I just never quite got on board with her, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, I think it affected how I viewed that whole. Era, even at the end with the angels, the two part where the part where they left, you know, I think you could only enjoy that episode if you were on board with the characters. I just wasn't on board with them at all. Unfortunately, as I say, because I loved Matt Smith, I just wanted him to have a likable companion. I think Matt Smith with Rose would be for me probably ideal, combination really, because I really liked Rose. You know, I did.
That would have been interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think the Pond stayed on for at least half a season too long.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't think they should have been there in Series 7.
Yeah.
Well, I've said this on the podcast before. Their story was told in that first series.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was just a little bit like treading water, really.
I have the same fear with Clara, really. Now, you know why? You know, she's coming back again. Even though they all thought she was leaving, it's just like, well, a story's been told, I think, in my opinion. So I was ready for a new companion myself.
The only thing is, will Stephen Moffat bring something else up to make it worth keeping her around?
Well,
we'll just have to wait and see, won't we?
I'm sure he will.
He's a clever man. It seems to be heard. Yeah, he is a clever man, but it seems to be her decision, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
From what we read,
So what I mean is, her having made that decision, will he find a way to make it worthwhile?
Hope he rises to it. Certainly. I mean, but to me, it seems like she had the perfect departure in Death in Heaven. I mean, I don't like the episode, as you will know.
Yes.
And anyone who listens to the podcast will know. But, I mean, what I did love about the episode was that scene, you know, when the...
Yeah.
Seer is, you know, basically lie upon lie compounded, mostly from Clara, but not entirely. And then you end up with the two characters lying to each other and then leaving each other when they don't really have to. And that just seems so perfect. And if I'm to aim one criticism at New Who, it's they cannot leave. They write perfect endings of characters and then keep bringing them back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, in a way, is part of the problem of making a sort of more sophisticated version of character drama television, in that, you know, in real life, you don't come to those full stops. And so when you bring people back in like Rose in Series 4 or whatever, in a way, it feels more like life, because if that had happened to you in life, then probably you would meet that person again later on. And, you know, somebody very close to me has just got back together with a girlfriend that he hasn't seen for 30 years since they went out as teenagers. It happens. But you're right. It might make it more like life, but it doesn't necessarily help the drama, does it?
No.
Exactly. I was just going to say, I mean, you have to trade it off, you know, for realism. And realism is not a massive thing in Doctor Who. compare it to, you know, what works dramatically. And I think that would have been such a perfect ending. And I think, you know, there are, I'm not a Clara hater. I think she's excellent, you know, as a character, as an actress. But there are people out there who don't like it. And, you know, they're not going to be at all happy about. They might have been happy with that being an ending, because it's a very poetic ending.
Yeah.
But for her to continue on, and apparently at the actress's whim, there's going to be a lot of backs still up, I will predict.
Hmm. I wonder if Stephen Moffat... I wonder if they were being a bit disingenuous when they said it was like a last-minute decision at the read-through, but then maybe they weren't. Maybe it really was.
We'll never know.
No, maybe we probably never
maybe
will.
Maybe we'll.
But only if Stephen Moffat does a book like The Writer's Tale, but he's not been in touch with me to co-write it for him yet.
Still time.
Yeah. Right. Don't change phone numbers. Just stay where you are.
Right, I'm going to change the subject entirely now. And I'm going to throw you a real curveball.
Blake Seven.
I'm going to change it that entirely. I'm going to throw you a bit of a curveball of a question that's just occurred to me. Well, it's not that much of a curveball, but seeing as you weren't prepared for it, you may not be able to answer it, but we'll see. Is there anything that the old series did that you think the new series hasn't been able to do that you'd like to see it do? And at the same time, is there anything that the old series didn't do very well that you think the new series does much better?
Mark!
But what I'm saying is, because obviously... I mean, if we hadn't had that 16-year gap, we would have seen the natural progression. And the old series would have turned into the new series.
Yeah.
But because we had that 15-year gap, now it looks like two entirely different things. Whereas actually it's the same thing. But there are things that get lost when something changes and develops.
Yeah.
And because we've got that gap, you can see the differences more clearly, can't you? So I'm just wondering, is there something that you miss from the old series that you really wish the new series did? And is there something else that you look at the new series and you say to yourself, God, why didn't the old series do that?
Well, the one thing that I always bothered me slightly with the new series was the idea of the romantic interest with the companion. I always found that just slightly... I understand why they did it. For the new audience and stuff, but that's always been slightly a sidestep from how it used to be, if you know, like the classic series was. But obviously now they've turned it full circle with having Capaldi's Doctor, that is definitely like the old series, isn't he, in that sense, with his companion. So that was the one thing that I missed from the old series, was a Doctor that was more like your favourite uncle, or do you know what I mean, the bad professor sort of thing, rather than a love interest. The Doctor as a love interest, it didn't work with me. The River thing didn't work for me either. I increasingly grew to dislike River as a character every further appearance of her.
Yeah.
I just don't think I ever believed in a romantic love between them. It just didn't, because you never saw it. You never saw any time that they spent together. And I don't know.
Well, I don't know if you've heard our last few podcasts, but I have a theory on that I've been talking about lately.
Okay. Right.
Which are, do you want me to repeat it now?
Yes, please.
Go on.
Well, I think it was supposed to be a tragic love affair in that it is never consummated and it's all in her mind almost. She's trying to persuade him that it happened. And because they're meeting each other out of sequence, she's trying to tell herself, if I tell him that somewhere in his past, but in my future or whatever, or in my past, but his future, we have been, a loving couple, then he'll buy it and we'll become a loving couple. But because... the story's been told out of order. She also knows that it's never going to happen. I think she's supposed to be a deliberately tragic character. Right. I just think it's not very spelled out, and so you can take from it what you will.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. They seem to take pains to make Matt Smith's Doctor an asexual character.
Yeah.
Yet they have a kind of long-going romance with a kind of semi
Exactly.
Time Lord, don't they? I
mean, and that's what tips the nod, that she's this tragic character, and it is an unconsummated affair.
Yeah, so it's probably cleverer than I have thought until this point. But I'm with Mark. I mean, I just thought we just had too much of her, I think.
Yeah.
I really, really liked River at the beginning. Alex Kixon is excellent. And, I really enjoyed it. I just thought there was just too much of it.
I think the main problem I had was the smugness. I think that's a lot of problem with Moffat's female characters. He writes them so smug, and I just find it really unlikable, that characteristic. Like, Amy was like that. Clara's like that sometimes as well. They're really cocky, sort of. It's just overconfidence in it, but it comes across as smugness.
And well,
I think River was like that, you know.
I think the trouble is he writes all his characters like that, but we're less used to seeing women characters being written like that, that it stands out more with the female characters, perhaps.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, so, also, it's the way it's played as well, the way it's, you know. Because Rose was quite had that side to her as well. I know that Moffat didn't write that, obviously, but she had that side. But I think Billy Piper had a personality. It was that sort of actress that could pull them lines off without being smug, if you know what I mean. She could get away with that.
I think she did in the first series, but not so much in the second.
Not at all in the second. But I mean, I don't think it is just female characters that, you know, the smugness jars, because Captain Jack was at least to start with written by Moffat, and he was unbearably smug.
That's the one story I like Captain Jack in, though, funnily enough.
Yeah, it's definitely his best one.
Well, I actually prefer him in Tortured, because he's dialed down a little bit, and I find him a more realistic character. I know Tortured itself is not the best cradle to place that character in, but I prefer his portrayal there, because he's not quite so annoying in that. And he actually, because he's in charge, I think he's not playing second fiddle to the main character. I think he shines actually in Tortured.
Right. We'll have to agree to disagree on that.
I thought you might.
Is there anything then that the new series does better, where you've said this is what Doctor Who should always have been, maybe? Or if only the classic series had been able to do this?
I think the ability to, and I hope this doesn't sound sexist, because I don't mean it to, I don't think it is, but I think the ability to attract female viewers because of, you know, the more emotional heft that there is in New Who.
Yeah.
And I absolutely love particularly 60s and 70s Doctor Who, but there are some fairly unrealistic relationships in there in some ways.
Yeah.
And I think the way that they brought that into this series, and people I know who would have, the last thing in the world they would have done is turn on Doctor Who on a Saturday night, were watching and were hooked and were talking to me about it, and were desperate to see the next episode.
Yeah.
You know, women who would never have gone anywhere near it before. And I think that is an amazing thing. And I think that helps the massive popularity it's got. And I think the old series could have done that a bit more. And what I liked about it, I haven't said what the new series could do, lessons you could take from the old series. And I think, I think that's all right. But the narrative drive, I think, is important. I remember watching a while back, one of our very early podcasts was on the Ark in Space. And we just watched a load of, I suppose it would have been Matt Smith in that era. And I thought, well, this is interesting, but it's kind of complicated. You know, there's stuff going on. There's lots of different levels, which is great. There's nothing wrong with that. And then I watched Ark in Space and I thought, this is pure narrative. This is plot driven, you know, to the nth degree.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, if you could get somewhere in the middle between those two, which I think Moffat approaches, then that would be perfect Who.
I wonder if that's what he's trying for with Series 9, because Series 9 looks to be made up a lot of two-parters. Mm. And I wonder if perhaps he's heading more in that direction now. Because he's tried the other thing, hasn't he? Yeah, yeah. Sorry, go on.
I agree with you.
So
carry on.
Well, Mark, then, is there anything that you see in the new series where you think maybe the old series could have done that better?
Well, I mean, only in retrospect, really. You know, because obviously, as Jim said about the emotional heft of everything, it's obviously a lot more character. And so for me, it's just a continuation. I see it as one long thing in a lot of ways. It's hard to explain.
I've got to say, though, Sharak Jeers is going to have loads of fun with you seeing it as one long thing.
He's going to extract that single phrase from this.
He is. I have got one email, actually. We'll save it to the end. It's not from him, though. Although it is quite an amusing one, but it'll do nicely at the end. Okay, here's another question, then. What is your favourite and least favourite moment of the last 10 years? Can be an episode, can be a character, can be a line of dialogue, can be a toy, whatever. Your favourite and least favourite thing from the last 10 years. Mark, your least favourite?
Nightmare in Silver. that was the one episode. I've disliked a lot of episodes in the past, as you can probably tell, by the way. I seem to have been Mr. Negative again and dragged everything down. Nightmare in Silver was the lowest point where I watched that episode and I found it so hideously bad that it made me angry. And I had to drive to a gig. I'd stayed as late as I could to watch it and then set off for a gig. And I was so angry when I got to the gig. Wow. It took me ages to it's stupid, that, isn't it? But it was, I did find it that, I just hated it. I thought it was appalling, really appalling. And I was really looking forward to it as well, with it being Neil Gaiman and the Cybermen. And the Cybermen looked fantastic. I thought, this is going to be amazing. And, oh my gosh. Mm. Yes, I really, that was my lowest point, I think.
The Doctor's Wife probably didn't help, did it?
Cause no, exactly.
That raised the bar, didn't it?
Yeah, I just thought. Yeah, I just thought it was going to be absolutely. This is going to be absolutely brilliant. And I just many moments, even on the rewatch, even when we did it again, the same points made me just my back just arch with. I don't know what it is. Well, I do know what it is, but it's just it's crazy how much I dislike it.
I remember.
I got angry about that one as well. I don't often get angry with you. I might get disappointed, but I very rarely get angry. I got angry with that one.
I remember in the week before it was on, because I'd had a review copy earlier. This my review came out. The Radio Times review came out, and we were both pretty scathing about it.
Yeah.
And then the DWO review came out and gave it 10 out of 10. And people were tweeting me and the guy from the Radio Times saying, "Why are you being so negative on it? I'm sure it's a brilliant episode." DWO said so, and we both just kind of said, "Yeah, okay, just wait till you see it."
Yeah, well, that's the thing, because I'd read your review, Jer, and seen the Radio Times one as well, and so my expectations were already lowered, but I still found it, just still made me angry. How bad's that?
Pretty bad.
Yeah.
Jim, then, your least favourite moment of the last 10 years?
It's a long and almost continuous moment. It's the what I've done with The Master.
Oh, really? All of it?
Yeah, I mean, not all of it. Derek Jacobi was fantastic.
Oh, right, yeah, okay.
And I would love to see a bit more of that. I mean, not just because he's old, but I mean, he's a terrific actor. And that moment when he changed from Yana to the Master just by a turn in his eye.
Yeah.
It's one of the most fantastic moments in New Who, of all Who, to be honest.
John Sim, though, he is a great actor, but like Eccleston, they were getting him to play against type.
Yeah, and that's what it felt like, because you'd seen John Sim in so much good stuff and playing it seriously. I think he's a little bit too boyish, actually, for the
for
a number of roles, actually, but The Master in particular in this case. But that kind of, I suppose, it was one of those moments when they're trying to make The Master a kind of dark mirror of the Doctor.
Yeah.
And Tennant was manic at times. But for me, it just sucked all the gravitas out of what the character had been. And moments like, it's at the end of time, isn't it, when he ends up being everybody and he ends up wearing a dress and stuff like that. It's just
terrible.
I never ever turned Doctor Who off, to be honest, but I definitely did then.
Yeah. That was another low point for me as well, that bit, definitely.
Oh, really? Yeah. And I think you like Missy a bit more than me, and I know JR does, but I cannot bear Missy.
Really? I think
it's not that she's female, because it was interesting that I think she went for the part that Keeley Hawes got in the end.
That's right,
Time Heist. But I mean, she wasn't able to do it, so they recast and Keeley Hawes got it, I think. But I can't help feeling, having heard that story, what it would be like if Keeley Hawes had been the Master. So it's not a female thing, it's acting choices or the way it's written. all that kind of stuff. I mean, refer to our episode on death in heaven if you want to hear an extended rant, and I won't despoil the old podcast with it. But
I do think Michelle Gomez is a much more natural fit for the way the part's written, though.
I agree, yeah.
The way it's written, yeah. But my point is, I don't think it should be written like that.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Let's knock that on the head and move on to your favourite things then. Jim, good. Let's stay with you, Jim. What's been your favourite thing in the last 10 years?
Oh, crumbs. It's difficult because there have been a lot of highs. Blink.
Yeah.
Absolutely marvellous. Well, in fact, that three-episode run that Margaret was talking about, you know, with the human nature and family blood story. That three episode rather short. I remember, I think I texted Martin on the podcast, and I just said, you know, yeah, Doctor Who is, yeah, this is as good as it gets. You know?
Yeah,
because those three episodes are just fabulous. But I think if I was to choose one thing, one positive, the thing that's re-engaged me and re-energized me and re-excited me about New Who more than anything else is Peter Capaldi.
Oh. Right.
Because I think you know how I feel about the last two episodes, and much as I like In the Forest of the Night, and it's quite charming, but I don't think it stacks up with the first nine stories. But the first nine stories in Series 8, I think, is the most enjoyable, most looked forward to by me run of stories since Hinchcliffe.
Well, right, yeah.
I just thought I've never been so excited about seeing the next Doctor Who episode as I have since Hinchcliffe, since Capaldi came and took the role.
Yeah, I can totally see that. In fact, pretty much mirrors how I feel about it too.
Oh, really?
Exactly. Yeah, it does. It really does. And I've got to say, I was already starting to feel that way with the Matt Smith stuff because, as you know, unlike most people, I really enjoyed Series 6. Series 7...
Some of it is brilliant. Of Series 6 is brilliant.
Yeah.
Series 7, I think, had its moments, but it never really... The highs in Series 7 were never as high as the Series 6 and Series 8 highs. So Series 7's bit of a lull between. But Mark, what's been your favourite moment of the last 10 years? Your favourite thing?
And it's hard to say. There's no one particular moment. I said Blink is my favourite. I would say that run, and that, but I think I've just enjoyed seeing it become a massive thing again. I mean, but not only again, but bigger than it ever was. I think the 50th year, everything that went on. I didn't go to any of the conventions or anything like that, so I don't pretend I did. But seeing all that happening and following everything, just that explosion of love for the show.
Yeah.
Just incredible, really. So I suppose the whole 50th thing was probably my favourite sort of time, even though I felt slightly let down by the 50th at the time. You know, the actual story itself. But, I love seeing the show back. So to be so massive, there's no one particular thing that's happened for it. It stands out, really.
That's good enough by itself. That's a thing. Seeing it become popular, yeah, that's a thing. Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, on that subject, I had a marvellous moment where my nephew asked for a Cyberman for Christmas.
Yeah.
I didn't think that was ever going to happen. No, you know, exactly. He was about I don't know, 6 at the time, something like that.
Yeah, I remember watching...
I never thought I'd be able to buy my nephew a Cyberman. No.
I remember watching The Confidential around and on first season, I think it was maybe episode 9 or 10, of Confidential, and it was all about how it had taken off again. And there was an exhibition and there was these kids going around and there was, you know, the Daleks and everything. And that just literally brought a tear to my eye. I thought that's amazing.
Yeah.
This is like this now after being so long in the wilderness, you know.
Remember one day in the middle of Series 2, I was in HMV and I wasn't looking for Doctor Who DVDs because obviously, you know, buy them on their day of release. But I happened to be near where Doctor Who was in the DVD racks. And I just noticed these two kids, and they were about 8 and 10. Yeah. And one of them picked up a copy of Revelation of the Daleks and said to the other one, look, this one's got Daleks in it.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and just a little simple thing like that. It's got Colin Baker on the front, and these two kids of 8 and 10 are...
Yeah.
I think it was Revelation, I'm sure it was.
Imagine how disappointed they were when they got home.
I hope they enjoyed the torture scenes.
Yeah. I don't know if they... I don't suppose for 1 minute they actually bought it, but they were just kind of browsing through the Doctor Who in the rack.
I kind of hope not. I hope they bought another one, but maybe not that one.
Yeah, maybe not. Well, guys, I've got to dash off and do stuff now. But I think we've pretty much come full circle on this anyway. So I just want to say thanks for joining me.
It's been a pleasure, yeah. Thanks for having us on board.
Yeah, yeah, I hope you've enjoyed. Yeah, I was going to say, I hope you've enjoyed doing it.
It's been great, yeah, brilliant.
Yeah. It's your first guest appearance on a whole other podcast. You've both been on this one in short spells, but Jim, you're a proper podcester now. How does that make you feel?
You took my podcest cherry. I'll never forget you. You were so gentle.
No, it's been cool. I mean, I first heard you, JR, on Radio Free Scarra. I think that was the link. Oh, Stephen was maybe on your show, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So that was when I first started. I came over to you. Was that around that time?
You know,
so yeah, it's nice to be on the show and a guest.
Mm. Yeah, great show, by the way.
It's strange. Sometimes you think you shouldn't talk because you think you're listening to it as an episode. It's weird.
Well, when he asks you a direct question, it's probably that's a good time to talk.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's that's that moment when you've been sitting listening to Jim for 5 minutes and you're thinking, I'm just listening to the Blue Box podcast. Yeah, and then all of a sudden, JR says, right, Mark, what about you?
Yeah. Your iPod speaks to you.
Yeah.
Frightening.
Well, it's been great. It's been great. And hopefully this episode will go out on the anniversary itself.
Oh, that'd be great.
Or as near as damn it, anyway.
Excellent. Well, I should say that, like Mark was talking about, he went through and watched all of New Who a while back. I'm going to start on that charity thing you're doing about watching Rose.
Oh, Rose at 10, yeah.
Rose at 10, yeah. I'm going to start then, and I'm going to carry on until I finish. So I'm going to do all of New Who again.
Well, that's brilliant. A great idea, yeah. And hopefully just in time for Series 9.
Yeah. Hopefully I'll squeeze it in before then. So I'll probably annoy people with tweets out there. But
excellent.
That'll be great. I think you should do one of them for your Crinoid podcast, because the only time you did new series was when you had on the anniversary year, wasn't it?
Yeah, the 50th, we went back and did one from Eggleston, one from Tennant, and one from Matt Smith. But we're going to continue with Capaldi. But we might dip back again. We've done Rose already. So that was the choice.
No, I've really enjoyed those episodes. And thank you. They're just as good as your episodes on the classic series. I think you should mix it up.
Maybe we should.
Excellent. Well, we're recording our, on the 26th, we're recording our next episode, which is Revelation of the Daleks. And then we're doing Day of the Doctor and Adventure in Space and Time, and then
Day of the Doctor,
Enemy of the World and Web of Fear, and then the show will be back. So we've got it all planned out. It's all going to be great.
Yeah. We're doing Frontios next.
Frontios. Frontios is one of those ones that I actually rather enjoyed when it was on, because I didn't have a very happy time during most of the 80s. But my opinion on it goes up and down every time I see it. It depends what mood I'm in. So I'll put it on and I really enjoy it. And then I'll put it on and I think, oh God, this is the worst barrel of rubbish I've ever seen.
Well, it depends if you like being spat in the face by Mark Strickson, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and on that note...
Is that a euphemism?
Hi, that's Mark's catchphrase. I know, that is Mark.
Yeah, oh dear.
Right. Until next time, then, and I can't honestly say I have any idea what we're doing next week, so we'll just have to cross that bridge when we come to it. Until then, I've been JR.
I've been Jim, and we'll continue to until a cure is found.
And I've been Mark.
And we'll speak again soon.
Mark, do you do it by Skype?
Yes.
When Lee starts talking, I can just wave my hand in front of him to shut him up.
Brilliant.